Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And welcome once again to the quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. In this episode, we do an Oscar review with Brian and talk about, again, kind of the year in movies and the Oscar broadcast as a whole, including the most memorable part of the Oscars, the Best Picture winner, Moonlight. Our top five will be top five people that Brian would like to see host the Oscars, with the added criteria of unlikely to most likely, rounding out that top five. But until we get there, first we want to say again, just thank you for listening and downloading this episode, and ask that you would join us in this conversation by following us on Twitter at 10K, T-E-N-K Movies, or following Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. And then also, just to ask you, Brian, where are you right now on the quest?
7649.
And I'm supposing you have watched at least one movie today. And what movie might that be?
Well, I just finished a movie from a foreign film from 1979, called Christ Stopped at Ebola, or Ebola. I'm not sure how to say it. I don't speak Italian. But it's included in the 1001 movies you must see before you die. And it wasn't in my 1001 movies to see before you die, but it was, you know.
Was it an award winner? Is that why it was included?
I don't think so. No, it's just, you know, I don't know what their criteria are. I mean, I don't know what kind of team of people they have paring this list down to 1,001. And they used to put out a new edition of the book every year. I think they stopped. But they had in it for like 10 years or so. They had a new edition every year. They'd update it. But I haven't seen one in a while. So,
you still use those books, you know, again, kind of as guides when you...
I do.
You get a wall somewhere.
I pretty religiously go to iCheckMovies.com, and that's the, you know, I try to use that list just to keep my...
before on the podcast.
Yeah. And that's where I check to make sure I have the most recent edition of that list. And stuff like the IMDb Top 250, which is currently... This happens every so often. It gets bombarded with six or seven Bollywood films that, you know, they intentionally overrate them so that they'll crack the top 250. And, you know, which makes sense when you think there are 1 billion people in India. So they could pretty easily take over the list anytime they wanted to. So, I struggle with whether or not I should go out of my way to watch these films. I usually default. Wind up saying I will.
Did you actually, before the Academy Awards started, were you actually able to watch all the Best Picture nominees?
Oh, yeah. This is the first year. I mean, every year now, so for about 4 or 5 years, I have tried to watch every nominated film, period, including all shorts and all that. Never been able to accomplish it because some of them are so difficult to find a copy of anywhere. Some of them only, you know, they only came out in Los Angeles, New York, in a limited run. Most of the small, shorter films you can purchase for like $10, all the live action shorts. You can purchase all the animated shorts. The short documentaries are surprisingly the hardest because they get their rights bought up by people like HBO and Netflix, and they're not available until they decide they're available. And so sometimes that's pre-Oscar, sometimes it's post-Oscar. So that's one of the harder ones. This year I was able to watch all but two, one short documentary, Watani My Homeland, and one feature length documentary, I Am Not Your Negro, about James Baldwin, which I'm really interested to see, but didn't get a chance to see it. But this year I discovered that apparently I'm not the only person that tries to desperately to watch all of them. And there's a name for it even. It's called the Oscar Death Race. And you know, I found a community of people that are all trying to like share links or whatever they can find. Still was not able to, I was able to watch all but two, which is the closest I've come. And now that I know about this resource, I think maybe next year I might be able to finally go into the night one night and having known I've seen every single one of these films. So
you do all the major motion picture categories, or All the films in total? Does that include foreign language films?
Oh yeah, all of them. I try to watch as many of them as I can. I think this year there were maybe 40 or 50 so total nominees. Now I don't wait until the nominations come out first week of January, second week of January, and I don't wait until then to start attempting this. What I usually do is sometime in October I'll start checking on usually it's IndieWire is the one I use, but there's a list of all the films they suspect will be, contenders or whatever. So I try to from that I try to like plan out my fall as to like, okay, this movie's coming out here. I need to try to, see this when I can so that when it does come out, I've already got a leg up and watch the number. Now, and they will put out a short list for like the animated shorts and the live action. So they put out, they'll put out the short list is 20 films. Okay. Some years I'll go through and try to watch those ahead of time. Most years, no, because it's not worth my time.
Let's go in and talk then about Best Picture and all the movies you saw. Of course, there's another conversation to be had about how the Best Picture winner was revealed. But let's first start and just say, in your opinion, was Moonlight the best picture of the year of those films nominated in that category?
I liked it, but I did think La La Land was better. Moonlight, in so many ways, and I've said this a couple of times on my Twitter account and other places, people that have asked, what happened with Moonlight beating La La Land feels like the reverse of what happened in 05 when Crash beat Brokeback Mountain. It feels like a smaller independent film that not a lot of people had heard about, but slowly started just gaining momentum throughout the once the nominations came out of nowhere to take the prize. Only in 05, it was the non-LGBTQ film that came out of nowhere to sweep it out. And this time it's the opposite. It's the one that deals with those issues most directly, and and easily the best picture winner that does deal with those issues most directly of the
So
90 or so that have won.
fair to say you can get on board with those being the top two, and
Oh
even personal preference aside, Moonlight's a worthy winner.
yeah,
Now,
it's not a
you're not alone in thinking that La La Land may have been the best picture award winner, because that's probably the thing people remember most about these Oscars. And I think there's some unfortunate side effects to that that we'll get to in a minute. But what was your kind of reaction? What was your take when all the confusion started, when La La Land was first
Well,
announced
I
and
was
then
when
Moonlight was
I
made
was watching it
awarded?
live, and the La La Land people get up there, and he's giving his acceptance speech, and I think he was maybe even talking in French at one point. But you could see people with headsets like running back and forth behind him. Okay, and my initial thought was in that split second was somebody stormed the stage. I mean, they're having some kind of security snafu. It looks like somebody's panicking.
Right.
Like, what is going on? And then he turns around and he says, actually, Moonlight won, guys. And it was, he handled it as well as somebody could have handled it. I will say that,
Right.
initially, it does immediately make when Warren was reading the card, I mean, he knew it said Emma Stone on the card. And because that's why when he first looked at the card, he looked at it and he pulled it back and he looked at it again and he pulled it back. And it came across as if he was being a jackass. I mean, that's really how it came across on the camera. And I'm sure to the crowd there that he was just being, coy. I don't give a shit. I'm 80-year-old Warren Beatty. I can do whatever I want kind of thing. And then he gave it to Faye, and he was sort of asking her to say, hey, does this say what I think it does? And she just went ahead and read it because she just saw La La Land, and she was just nervous because she's sitting there waiting on him and feels like she's the butt of the
Yeah.
joke. So she just read, and I didn't see it at the time, but they said you can see or you can hear if you listen to it closely. He mouths to her, it says Emma Stone on this. It doesn't say Best Peter, it says Emma Stone. So he knew.
Yeah, I remember watching again video of it again this morning, since we're recording this the day after the Oscars aired. And seeing or hearing that too, hearing Warren Beatty like in the background. Go, no, wait, no, that's
Funniest thing is like when they're inviting the Moonlight people to come up, Warren comes center stage and like he feels like he has to defend himself. Like it's what's so funny
right.
that he feels like that he's pissed off that he just got embarrassed. You know what I'm saying? That like the mo that all this has happened, and he has no sympathy for the people that just thought they won an Academy Award. Now they're like, take a seat.
Well,
all about,
kinda,
I just got
it kind of made him a bigger part doing that.
Yeah.
Kind of made him a bigger part of the story, because it really wasn't his fault. He didn't announce it. He didn't get, I mean, he was given the wrong card and that sort of thing. Like, he didn't screw it up. But maybe by putting himself in the center there, he got.
From what I have read,
that,
like, they have.
As far as that goes.
The PricewaterhouseCooper, which usually for years they'd always come on stage as part of the ceremony and say, these are the accounts. They don't do that anymore. And somebody said, see, you take them out of the show and see how they respond. But they have two different accountants who have two briefcases that contain all of the envelopes, all 24 winners, and they take two different routes to the theater in case one of them gets stuck in traffic. And then one of them stands on one side and one of them stands on the other side. And then I guess after every one, they're supposed to put the unused one in a bag and leave the other one locked in that case. And for whatever reason, supposedly, from what I've read, the one that gave it to him immediately realized that they had given him the wrong one. They realized it within a second before he announced it. I don't understand why there was no mechanism in place to go up to him and stop him prior to that, rather than, because that's the worst case scenario, right? I mean, the absolute. Right. Now, of course, you know, it could have been a situation where La La Land could have won anyhow, you know, because it was the favorite and all that. And that would have been, that's what makes it even better, is because it's a bit of a, it's not the biggest upset ever, but it's a pretty significant upset. And you called out the favorite, which just makes the whole thing more dramatic.
It does sort of overshadow the fact that it was an upset, given the way that it happened. And as you said, kind of this movie that gained a lot of buzz and steam as it went. I think there's some other, though, just kind of interesting things that now this kind of takes the attention. This is what's going to be remembered. And there's probably some other things about this Oscar ceremony that will be quickly forgotten. And so I want to maybe transition into some of your thoughts and impressions on that. For me, the biggest thing that will be overlooked because of this is the other biggest surprise of the evening until Best Motion Picture was that Suicide Squad won an Academy Award.
Oh, my gosh. I was so upset about this. I was so upset about this. I mean, I think there were three films nominated in the category. Okay, that's it. There were three films. There was, I think, A Man Called Uwe, which is a French film, which is the one I kind of had hoped for.
It's a Norwegian film. I just read the book.
Yeah.
I need to see that movie.
It's a good movie. It's a really good movie. But, you know, it was nominated, and I think, I forget what else was the nominee, and I was like, anything but. And, of course, Suicide Squad. Of course, it's no different than a couple years ago. I don't think it won. It may have won, but Bad Grandpa, or the one with the Jackass guy where he's like playing jokes on people, it was nominated for Best Makeup as well.
There you go. Suicide Squad now has as many Oscars as Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
It's
unfortunate.
More than Matt Damon?
Same Matt Damon that, has Matt Damon
has
a
writing Oscar.
Yeah, he has a screenwriting Oscar.
That's crazy. and that's not getting much play.
Because it's a horror. I mean, it's just a. Ugh.
And then the other thing it really overshadows is my really thought was that this Oscars was very much seemed to be very much by the numbers.
It was.
Stone winning Best Actress. She was kind of the favorite going in.
She was a lock. She was 100%
a lock, and her speech was unbelievable.
There was no way she was not going
to
win.
Not trying to denigrate.
She has
the favorite,
and somehow or another,
very formulaic Oscars.
Somehow or another, and I don't know. You know, Viola's been around for a while. Okay, she had a pretty lengthy career, but something clicked in the past 4 or 5 years where she became this like beloved institution that she was not prior to that. I mean, she's close to the way she's revered and people talk about her. She's close to Meryl Streep level as far as the way her peers discuss her. And something clicked, you know, and some of it was when she started on How to Get Away with Murder and she won. I think she was the first African-American to win the Primetime Emmy Award for Best Actress in a Drama. So, you know, she's once that happened, it was just like you almost felt like this. She was good in Fences, but you felt like that the Academy was looking for a role to reward her with an Oscar. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like, we got to find something. Okay, yes. And so they, no matter what it was, if it was halfway decent, it was going to happen just because she's got this sort of wave of support coming behind her.
But she's also really damn good. So
I'm not saying that at all. But you, no. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that, you know, she was good. There's just nothing going to stop her. You know, no matter how good, you know, she may be good, but there may have been somebody else that was better in a certain category. And they chose to run her, which apparently they can do whatever they want, but they chose to run her as best supporting actress instead of best actress, right, which is a little cheap because she's in half the movie. So it feels a little disingenuous, but you do that because you're trying to pick your battles and pick right. your, you know, set it up.
I guess the only other maybe minor upset, you know, going in again, kind of lost in the weirdness of what happened with the Best Picture, is that Lin-Manuel Miranda was denied his EGOT.
Well, I think most people
didn't win Best Song. That's kind of
well.
Kind
I
of
think most people knew because considering La La Land was a musical, and it had two nominated songs, you sort of knew one of those. And I had guessed City of Stars would be the one that would win. Lin will get an Oscar. I mean, that's going to happen. And in you know, he's gotten the hardest part of the EGOT down. It would not surprise me if he is within the next year or two because he's in the reboot, remake, whatever they're calling it, of Mary Poppins. He's playing the Dick Van Dyke type character. And it would not surprise me if he got either a song or possibly a performance nomination for that film. I can just feel it. Emily Blunt is Mary Poppins, which is pretty good casting too. So,
yeah. So the other takeaway I have, I think, maybe has gotten a little bit more notice. You mentioned how well the producers and everybody of La La Land reacted.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Jimmy Kimmel really shined also with the Steve Harvey joke. And then, of course, I don't know if it started with Jimmy and his people or just people on Twitter kind of making references, but then sort of being able to dovetail it into the ongoing feud with Matt Damon. Matt Damon handed Leo DiCaprio the wrong envelope, and then, you know, doing that. I think Kimmel comes out looking really good in all of this too. By the way, he handled it.
Well, the
broadcast. I really like Kimmel as Oscar host.
I do too. But the only problem I have is with the Kimmel Matt Damon stuff. That feels a little inside baseball in a way, because if you don't know the joke and you don't know the decade-long history they have, you know, I mean, we do, and a lot of people do, but I think there are an equal number of people that are watching the ceremony that are like when he did that thing about how Matt Damon inspires me, and he's watching We Bought a Zoo. I mean, that's what, you know, he's watching We Bought a Zoo, and he's talking about he wanted to buy a zoo, and he bought a zoo. Like, he's just destroying the movie, destroying it, you know, and it worked. But you almost got the feeling that they intentionally, because this was they had done three earlier actors and actresses that talking about somebody, a movie that inspired them, and they came out with the person that they talked about. And then it was almost like those people were almost a setup just so they could have this, and, you know, right, just so he could destroy Matt Damon. But, you know, Matt took it well, and in some ways it was good for Matt because it sort of builds his brand and makes him more affable in a way.
Well, I like it. For me, I like Oscar hosts that kind of build some sort of, I don't want to call it shtick because that sounds too negative, but you know, like Crystal always did the opening number type thing, and that was interesting. That was kind of his part of his performance, his repertoire, and I like that in my Oscar hosts, is to have some sort of hook you keep coming back to. And Kimmel, more than most of the ones recently that have come in, seems to be like a guy who could sustain a hosting gig
mm-hmm.
for multiple years, maybe better than others. Man, I'm kind of surprised Ellen hasn't done it more.
She's done it like maybe two or three times. I know she's done it twice.
Could do that, but and maybe we'll never have a Bob Hope, Billy Crystal kind again.
I think there is
several years in a row, but Kimmel to me would be an odds on favor. If we're going to have somebody like that, he would really be the
well. And the other reason, underrated reason that why that might work too, is he's already on the same network,
right?
And he's hosted the Jimmy Kimmel Live after the Oscars show for a number of years. So he has, you know, a rapport with some of these people and this kind of stuff. So yeah, I could see that.
I guess I just like the point of view that I think Kimmel comes from, which is different than someone like Fallon, right? You'd expect Fallon might host the Oscars at some point, which I think would kind of almost be a disaster, because Fallon feels a little too on stage, a little too friendly. That works real well in a talk show, but I think at the Oscars, you need a little bit more balance than he would offer. Jimmy's friendly, but he does, you know, he can do kind of some of the deprecating humor in a way that feels like you're in on the joke rather than you're really being insulted, which is different than, say, also someone like Ricky Gervais. Golden Globes.
Ricky excels at going past the line. I mean, that's his whole point.
That's right. So I like Jimmy Kimmel as host and thought he did a good job. Let's wrap up this part before we get to top five about people we would also like to see host the Oscars. Just give me any other kind of last thoughts, closing thoughts. What do you think this year of movies is going to be remembered most for?
Well, I think this could be the way in which Moonlight won and the fact that it won could. I know last year, after the Oscars So White controversy and the lack of any people of color in any of the nominees for acting last year, they made a conscientious effort to expand Academy membership and offer it to larger numbers of people, particularly trying to get in people of color. And they also made they made it more just so that it wasn't a lifetime membership. You had to either made something or been actively involved. So they took membership away from a number of people. And I am wondering, it's too early to say definitively, but I'm wondering if that had something to do with why Moonlight won. Was because the people that are voting are radically different than they were a year ago. And we'll see if that, you know, if that's the case, we may see more smaller personal films win. Somebody made the point that this film, I think Moonlight, was made on a $250,000, $300,000 budget, which is a lot of money to us, but comparatively, a drop in the bucket. So they say, you know, if that can win Best Picture, then it suddenly opens it up to a wave of people that would have had no access to that kind of recognition, certainly not 10 years ago.
Well, that's an interesting thought. We might not have much time to explore it, but when I hear you say that, it strikes me that it can open it up to any movie, any of these other maybe projects you might describe initially as passion projects, small independent films. But that might actually serve to further insulate the Oscars in some
way. Well, that was my fear is that, you know, if they're trying to put on, because, you know, they're putting on a show that they want people to watch. I mean, one of the things they've always said for years, they make a point to say, watched by billions of people worldwide, which I don't know if that's true or not, but they make a point to say it. Well, that number has been dwindling. And if you continue to put in films that have a very small window or ceiling for number of people that are going to be interested in watching this film, it's going to be harder for people to get excited to watch an award show that rewards films they're never going to watch.
Well, in that case, to transition to our top five, the answer there may actually be to not do Jimmy Kimmel again, not just because the producers aren't a good fit, but to get people to watch, you have to have a host that people want to watch. And so we might have to think outside the box for hosts that have never hosted the Oscars before, but that personally you might want to see and engage you. So this is your personal list.
Yeah.
Top five. And again, kind of with the added filter of number five is kind of most unlikely up to number one, which you think is probably the more likely of these five. So Brian, give us your top five Oscar hosts who you would like to see who have never hosted the Oscars.
Well, coming at number five is a guy I find to be hysterical. And if you follow him on Twitter, he's erudite and he's much more, his persona is one, but it's carefully crafted. And although you might not realize it, number five, I'm going with Norm Macdonald,
which is probably about as unlikely as you can get on this list.
It's not happening.
After he hosts, I think he hosted the ESPYs. We're not going to count that in the awards.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
he talked about working with producers. I think Norm's probably burned some bridges.
Awkward humor is his forte, and it would just be a lot of anti-jokes, it would just be really funny and fascinating.
All right, number four, though, I think, as we talked about before,
we talked about this.
McDonald is more of a loner, number four might be more of a team effort of some kind.
Any combination in tandem or alone of the cast, the principal cast of the 2016 version of Ghostbusters, any of those ladies, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, Melissa McCarthy, and Leslie Jones, you might want to at least have a pair of them, though, so they could play off each other. Particularly, I think, Leslie Jones, who I think in a three-hour show, her shtick might run a little grating. But, you know, I think that would be fantastic.
I love this idea. I think it's great. I think the only thing that would keep it from being or keeps it maybe at this end of the unlikely spectrum is how poorly that Ghostbusters film was received.
It was received poorly.
And just, you know, doing multiple hosts. That's something the Oscars have seen.
Two hosts has been your maximum.
And when they've had two hosts, they haven't had good results.
Well, now, when Anne Hathaway and James Franco, this was in the middle of the time when he was first starting to fall off a cliff as far as people started to lose public opinion. I mean, he started to lose that battle to some people. But supposedly Anne was a real diva. Like, she was counting.
Neither one of them were good, and it was not a good look.
And it was a desperation move.
I would love, though, to see Melissa McCarthy pull out, like, the awards podium like she did with Sean Spicer's podium.
That'd be funny.
Speaking of SNL, another SNL alum, I think, is going to clock in at number three.
Well, this is just a personal wish list for me. I don't know that he'd even be very good at it, but it would be appointment viewing for me would be Bill Murray hosting the Academy Awards.
And I think, again, if they could get someone like Bill Murray, I do think that would get eyeballs on the screen. Because everybody who doesn't love Bill Murray, as any listener of this podcast knows, Bill Murray was going to appear on this list. So probably don't need to say much more about that. Let's move on to your number two.
Number two, we've mentioned him earlier in the program, and he is a youngish. I mean, he's our age, but he feels like he has the complete package. He's a triple threat. You know, he can sing, he can dance, he has charisma, and I'm going with Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Lin-Manuel Miranda is number two. Now, I would have thought he'd be number one, so I'm really intrigued now to think about that. But yeah, Lin-Manuel, I think that almost
he has
a lock.
He has a lot of charisma. He brings in a different demographic. I guarantee you he would have eyeballs on the screen. And also, you know, if you want diversity, you know, he's a Puerto Rican, and it would help sort of open that up as well. But number one is a guy who the only reason I give him a bit of an edge is because it feels like he has more connections in the industry, and it feels like he's more primed to do something like this, because it's like he's been around the block a little bit more in gigs like this, and that is Justin Timberlake.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Someone with a little more cachet right now.
Yeah. Yeah. A little more like connections with people in the industry.
Or if you think about a scenario where Lin-Manuel and Justin Timberlake both call whoever's producing and say, I want to host. As popular as Lin-Manuel is, Justin probably gets the first call.
Because he has a little more friends, a little more favors he can call me. Plus, you know, Lin hosted Saturday Night Live this year, but Justin has numerous experience with, you know, Saturday Night Live and that kind of skit stuff. Having said that, one thing I think the Oscars could do on another level is let somebody like Lorne Michaels produce the show. And then you would open it up to all something.
If Lorne Michaels produced, we'd definitely get Jimmy Fallon. And
I mean, sure. we might
we
get Jimmy
that
Fallon
right now. Well, listeners, you've heard Brian's top five. Tell us what you think. How likely is his top one or two? How unlikely is his four and five? and let us know who you'd like to see host the Oscars who's never done it before. Thank you so much again for listening to our ramblings about movies and conversations about Brian's quest to get to 10,000 movies before he turns 40. We will catch you again in another couple of weeks. Hope that your week also will be a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11.